Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Scary Stories for the Soul. I want you all to think back. When was the last time you played hide and seek? If you're anything like me, it's been a while. Mainly because, one, I'm 31 years old now, and two, I wasn't a huge fan of the game as a kid. It wasn't because I wasn't good at it. I mean, personally, I think I was great at it. It was the general sense of plunging into the unknown that I wasn't a huge fan of. Okay, maybe I'm being dramatic, and trust me, even 9-year-old me was a grade A drama queen. But walking around, all by myself, sometimes in the dark, searching for people that didn't want to be found, caused this little voice in the back of my head to speak out and ask, what if, one of these days, I found something that I wasn't exactly looking for? What if, on one of the nights when I was playing in the dark, instead of finding one of my cousins or something, I found someone else? Or something else. Someone behind a tree. Something behind a bush. Something hiding away and watching me, waiting for me to find it. They always say that the supernatural finds you when you least expect it. So 9-year-old me thought, what if by one of those off chances when I was playing hide and seek, I found myself face to face with not a cousin, but a ghost? I don't know if anyone else thought of this seemingly harmless children's game in the same way that I did, but I was surprised to learn that a few of our favorite children's games have dark histories. And I'm not talking about the usual spooky games that you all might be thinking of, like Bloody Mary or Candyman. Those are meant to be scary. I'm talking about the games that we played without having the furthest inclination that there was something sinister hiding in their histories. Like, for instance, Cooties. Now, Cooties aren't a game, but you guys remember Cooties, right? Those little imaginary bugs that you became terminally infected with when you played tag and were deemed it? Nobody wanted the Cooties. And you didn't even have to be playing tag to get them. All it took was one mean kid to tell everyone that you had Cooties, and suddenly you're spending the next week eating and playing alone. Nobody wanted to play with the Cootie Queen after all. But I bet you would be fascinated to know that cooties might actually be derived from a real-life illness. There's a word in Malaysian and Maori languages that refers to the bite of a parasitic insect similar to something like lice or fleas. The word is kutu. Now, because the kutu have a tendency of getting red and inflamed, they're actually really hard to hide. But despite the fact that they're not the prettiest to look at, kutu are very rarely lethal. At most, they're kind of annoying and not so pleasant to look at. But that won't stop people from assuming that because you have them, you're dangerously contagious. Everyone will know if you have kutu. Not just because people will say it, but because they can see it. And remember, no one wants to play with the kutu queen. So, if you just so happen to have this, be prepared for a long period of involuntary isolation. Then there's perhaps the most recognizable of games, Ring Around the Rosies. everyone knows the nursery rhyme, and subsequently the game. You prance around in a big circle with 4 or 5 of your closest friends and sing, "Ring around the rosies, a pocket full of posies. Ashes, ashes, we all fall down." And then you drop down to the ground in a giggling and dizzy heap. Rumors that the song vaguely refers to the bubonic plague, which was astutely nicknamed the Black Death, had become very well known in popular culture. For many years, the connection between the two, the Black Death and the Ring Around the Rosies, was just a rumor. But many etymologists and poets have made serious, tangible connections between the beloved children's game and the plague. The line, "pocket full of coatsies," for instance, could refer to the popular practice of filling one's pockets and sleeves with flowers to mask the scent of the plague on and around them. At the time, there was also an established herbology practice where people would stuff their clothing with specific herbs and flowers, believing that these pieces of foliage would keep the plague away. The flowers and herbs acted as protectants between their skin and the deadly disease. And then there's the "ring around the rosies" verse. A common symptom of the plague were red, tender pustules which would erupt around various parts of the body. The pustules were extremely painful and almost impossible to cover up. Placing any sort of fabric or material over them could cause them to burst, which then risked deadly infections. Ring around the rosies could be a direct reference to the red ring of irritation around the, quote, rosy colored pustules. Even as a child, I knew that singing "ashes, ashes" was a little odd to add into a children's game. I didn't know it back then, but the ashes that the song refers to are the literal human ashes of the countless casualties of the plague. Bodies were cremated for 2 different reasons. One, the sheer multitude of citizens who died of the plague made it almost impossible to find burial spots for all of them, forcing governments to mass cremate bodies. And two, many people believed that burying the body of a plague victim would taint the soil, resulting in its further spread if anything were to ever be planted on or around that area. The lyrics could also be heard as a tissue, instead of ashes, ashes. A tissue would mimic the sneezing, coughing sensation that a lot of the plague victims suffered from. Sneezing was a common symptom of the plague. The final verse of the song is fairly obvious. We all fall down. An estimated 75 to 200 million people died of the bubonic plague, roughly 30 to 50% of Europe's entire population. The line morosely acknowledges not only the mass casualties of the plague, but the idea that eventually everyone would succumb to it. Unsurprisingly, one of my favorite games to play as a kid was light as a feather, stiff as a board. Even as a 10-year-old, I knew that there was something occultish and dark about the game, and seeing my favorite witches, Nancy, Rochelle, Bonnie, and Sarah from The Craft play it with extreme success only furthered my belief that there was something seriously witchy about the game. But until now, I never knew how right I was. Because the correct way of playing light as a feather, stiff as a board, the actual rules of the game resemble more of a ritual than a kid's game. You see, the way I was taught to play light as a feather, stiff as a board was that one person would lay down on the floor while 4 participants sat beside her, 2 on each side. You would place 2 fingers under each arm and leg and chant, light as a feather, stiff as a board. If you did it right, you could lift your friend clean off the ground. And if you did it wrong, you could take turns trying to figure out who didn't believe hard enough to lift her off the ground. Like any good spell, the correct ways to play have much more intricate rules, meaning you might be playing light as a feather, stiff as a board, completely wrong. There's a few different versions of the game, but the first version of it has all the same essential steps as the more watered-down version that I played as a kid. In this version, one person lays down on the floor facing up with their eyes closed while five people surround them. Two on one side, two on the other, and one at the head. Two fingers are placed underneath their arms and legs, but the fifth person gently cradles the back of the head of the participant on the floor. Instead of starting off right away with the light as a feather, stiff as a board chant, the game starts a little bit differently. Gently, almost in a whisper, the person at the head says, "They're looking ill," referring to the friend on the floor. Each person around her then repeats it, one by one, until it reaches the full circle. Then the person at the head will say, "She's looking worse," which also gets passed down around the circle. In a mournful whisper, the friend at the head will say, "She's dying," and the others will repeat it just as mournfully. Finally, in a resolute tone, the person at the head will announce to everyone, "She's dead." Then, without missing a beat, everyone will chant in unison, "Light as a feather, stiff as a board. Light as a feather, stiff as a board. Light as a feather, stiff as a board." The seemingly dead body will then rise off the floor and continue to float so long as the others believe that she will. The magic of this spell is achieved because of one major thing. The person laying on the floor becomes so entranced with the tale of her impending and then eventual death that she allows herself to become as weightless as a spirit. Hearing the sorrow in people's voices, and then the resolved way in which her own death is announced, it convinces this person that they are in fact dead, letting them drift off into weightlessness. This makes it easier for the people around her to lift her off the ground. Another more uncommon way to play light as a feather, stiff as the board is with the use of a chair. One person takes a seat on a chair, while two people flank them on the left and two on the right. These people then perform a little ritual in which they rub their hands together to generate as much heat as possible. Once they get their palms to the desired temperature, they'll hover their hands over the person's head and circle them in a clockwise motion. Silently, the participants will concentrate on transferring the energy from their palms to the person sitting on the chair. After three turns around the chair, they place their fingertips underneath the seat and chant, "Light as a feather, stiff as a board," until the chair and the person on the chair rise up off the floor. The transfer of energy, as well as the staunch belief of all of those persons performing the ritual, culminate into a magical lifting of the chair. Of course, the one thing that all of these versions have in common is the light as a feather, stiff as a board chant. They also have the unwavering belief that magic will make it all work. Perhaps that's why it's easier for us to believe that someone just didn't want it badly enough when the chair or the person don't lift. Either way, I know for a fact I've been playing this game completely wrong. Games are never just games. Even the most innocent and innocuous ones that we played growing up usually have something to hide. Words are never just words, and songs are never just songs. There's a silent and sometimes sinister history to almost every little nursery rhyme we utter or game that we play. Does that make them any less fun? I'm not sure. I think that might be for you to decide. All I know is that I feel much more reassured in my belief that hide and seek might have been made to hide from things that you might not wanted to seek you. This has been Isabel Cortez. Go play hide and seek. Tell me about it, and I'll see you next time. Listen, rate, and subscribe to Scary Stories for the Soul on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, or wherever you want. Don't let me tell you what to do. I'm not your mom. Don't forget to follow Scary Stories for the Soul on Instagram, Twitter, and Threads. And if you have any legends, myths, or ghost stories you want to see covered on the show, email your ideas to scarystoriesforthesoul2020@gmail.com.